Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on rationing when we come back. If you're earning $50,000 a year and you pay all of your 14 taxes, you get to keep about 40% of what you create and produce. Your government gets the other 60%. That's about $20,000 for you and $30,000 for the government. Now, isn't that just real special? And if you think that your share isn't enough for you, then why don't you go out and work twice as hard and produce twice as much and make $100,000 next year? Then go ahead and pay your same 14 taxes just like you did this year. And you're going to net 25%, and the government will net about 75%. You know, that means that for working twice as hard and producing twice as much, you're going to net a little bit more, $4,000 more. That's 8% more. 8% more net take-home pay than you did this year. And remember, that's guaranteed by Congress and the IRS. Now, that's why I contend that there ought to be something more intelligent for you and I to do than to work to put ourselves into the top 5% of income earners and then only net 25% of it. Why don't you call today and order our free general law CD package and let me tell you how to deal with that kind of crime. It's 4 hours of entertaining information that answers many of your legal questions about taxes and why it is that we pay so much and receive so little. Now, let me teach you how to do just that in our Tax and Status School, which is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you'd like to order one or our free general law CD package, why don't you call direct 417-273-4967. Just ask for it. That number again is 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email. Send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org. Or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. Rationing. Rationing is coming to the United States. Indeed, you're going to see rationing imposed worldwide by all of the governments of the world, just like it was back in World War II. Of course, to some greater and lesser extent, depending upon where you live and what it is that's being rationed, what's in short supply. But rationing is the system, when it's imposed politically, of sharing the shortage. It's a top-down modality that is very, very popular. Everybody loves it. It's the worst possible solution to an economic problem, but you can bet that that's the solution that's going to be imposed because it's political. And then number two, it is the top-down modality for sharing that shortage. Now, last night I was watching the Lehrer NewsHour, and Joe Lieberman was on, and with a guy named Lamar Alexander. Alexander is the senator from Tennessee, and Joe Lieberman remembers that maverick Jewish senator from Connecticut. Well, Joe Lieberman was advocating this new carbon tax. It's before the Congress right now. Now, I've been reporting for the last 2 years on this carbon tax. When I first heard it proposed, I started reporting on it. It's a $1 per gallon carbon tax to be placed on gasoline. Well, Joe last night said that the initial round is 53 cents. So just in case you were wondering, they're shooting for a dollar. That was the plan, at least it was 2 years ago. Now it's before the Congress, and they're about to act on it, and they think they can get it passed, and they think the president's going to sign it before the elections this year. Now, you can rest assured that if they don't get it passed, for whatever reason, that in the next administration, that is in 2009, they're going to pass this carbon tax. Now, maybe you've been asleep at the switch. Maybe you didn't understand how this thing's going to work. But we've got $4 a gallon gasoline now in the United States, and they're going to tack on 53 cents for openers. So that's going to raise the price to $4.53. Now, you know, when your government tells you, or they give you a cost estimate, you know, they say, well, the war in Iraq is going to cost about $50 billion, and we'll be in and out of there in about 2 months. Well, it's been 5 years, and it's $2 trillion later. Now, that's what we've spent so far is $2 trillion. John McCain was on the other day. He says that when you elect him president, he expects that we're going to be in Iraq for 4 more years, but he thinks that by the end of his first term, we can disengage from Iraq. Well, if that's the case, then it looks like we're going to be there for about 10 years then. That's what the program calls for. Now, it doesn't make any difference who you elect, and you're going to be there for another 4 or 5 years. And that's because that country over there holds about 25% of the world's oil reserves, you know, that we know about. And the United States is going to hang on to that just as long as possible. Now, I'm not sure that the United States is going to be here in 5 more years. So for all of you Iraqis over there, if you're concerned about an American occupation for 5 more years, I'd be surprised, real surprised. It's kind of like the election coming up here in the United States. this coming November. We normally have an election every 4 years, and we usually schedule it for the first Tuesday in November. If we have an election in this country in November of this year, I'm going to be really surprised, because I don't think George Bush is going to step down. I think we got another false flag operation coming to the fore, and then they'll have martial law, and then with martial law, well, we can't have elections when we have martial law. I mean, you just saw that over in Pakistan, you know, that Musharraf guy over there, they're about to have elections, and so he just said, well, we'll just put that one on hold for a while. Now, that's kind of what I'm expecting here. But meanwhile, back on the farm, the entire world model is imploding as I speak. I say the entire world model. I mean, the social fabric, the political fabric, the economic fabric, the military fabric. I mean, in just about every category that you can talk about, the world is disintegrating. It's imploding, as they say. So let me give you a couple, three news articles here, and then let's talk about this thing of rationing, because we've had it before, and I've said, you know, to my students when they walk in the door, I say, boys and girls, if you don't have a solution to the problem, you don't need to talk about it. It doesn't have any point. It's like talking about the sun burning out. You know, when I was a kid, they say, well, my God, the sun, you know, is burning up. Well, that's bad news, because, you know, if the sun burns out, we all die here on planet Earth, and so that means curtains for us. And the sun is burning up, and it's going to burn out at some point in time. So is it going to be in 100,000 years or 100 million years or 100 billion years? You know, is there a way to figure that out? And the answer to that is yes, you can figure it out. It's being consumed at the rate of 5 feet an hour. I've reported that to you more than once. And if you just do the arithmetic and you take the size of the sun at 750,000 miles in diameter at 5 feet an hour, it's going to burn out in about 100,000 years. Now, for us bottom feeders that only live 70 years, you know, in a lifetime, that's 100,000 years, you know, from now, it doesn't pose an immediate problem, but it is a problem that's going to have to be faced by somebody at some point in time. I mean, you know, as long as humanity continues at some point in time. And, you know, our evolutionary friends, they keep telling us about billions and billions of years ago. And, you know, a million years, you know, give or take a couple, you know, is just, you know, the other day, you know, in evolutionary thought and evolutionary time. And so if you just do the arithmetic on that sun problem, you know, But the burning out or the burning up of the sun is an insoluble problem that we really don't need to get excited about and talk a whole lot about, because there isn't anything that you and I are going to do about it one way or the other anyway, are we? So I don't spend a lot of time worrying about the sun burning out or about supernovas, you know, 50 billion light years away and black holes swallowing up the universe. It's a problem that needs to be solved, I guess, at some point in time, but it's going to have to be solved by somebody that's got more power than I got. But now this rationing thing over here, now that's something that I can handle. We went through this rationing thing when I was a kid back in World War II, and I was a part and parcel of it and privy to it, and I listened to the old-timers talk to me about rationing and how they got by and how they bought stuff on the black market and one thing and another. And now, for most of you people here living in the Barney, Mr. Rogers, Big Bird generation, here in America, we got some cartoon characters here, little kids' programs. And in the Barney, in the Sesame Street, and Mr. Rogers mode, everything always turns out good. Everything turns out right. Everybody's all smiles. There's never any death. There's never any problems that can't be solved. And everybody lives happily ever after in a multiracial society where there's no discrimination. Everything in the cartoon world is perfect. It's a perfect world. And we have two generations now that have been raised in this perfect world utopian mythology. It's a fantasy is what it is, but they've been raised that way, and that's what they expect. And so I'm going to give you some numbers over here that, you know, are probably going to shock a lot of you. Most people can't handle these numbers. In fact, a lot of times I recommend, and I was talking to some students the other day about the International Forecaster. You've heard me recommend that a time or two. The International Forecaster is a private newsletter put out by a fellow named Bob Chapman, and it's only for adults. And for you people that are in college, high school, or you're under 40, probably it's not a newsletter for you. I got to tell you right up front that you'd just be wasting your money, because I don't think that you can handle the information that's being put out. It's more than you've been exposed to. It's more than you're used to. It's more than you can probably handle. Now, if you're 40 or over, you know, maybe you can handle this. So a lot of you probably can't, but, you know, some of you probably can. Now, here in the Forecaster was a page, page 7. A paragraph said, the World Bank says 48 out of 58 countries tracked have imposed price controls, consumer subsidies, export restrictions, or lower tariffs. You all know how prices have risen and why they will continue to rise. Massive amounts of money are being spent buying real assets, and that will continue. It's not just food. It's all commodities and gold and silver, and it's not going to stop anytime soon. Some supermarkets are already limiting the purchases of rice, and they talk of food rationing, and it flies around Washington. Food rationing and ration coupons are being discussed, just like we had during World War II. What a great way to further control and subjugate the American people. All right, so with that paragraph, just in passing, we don't have rationing going on now, but I wanted to report to you that it's being talked about now by your politicians in Washington. Now, when the politicians are talking about rationing, well, those are all top feeders, and those people get the information a long time before you and I down here at the bottom get the information. These people are privy to the numbers and the statistics and the facts and figures long before it's ever put out by Katie Couric and Brian Williams and Charlie Gibson. So that being the case, I rely on these underground newsletters or the private newsletters to keep me abreast of what's going on, because there are people on the inside. Now, there's insiders in the stock market, and there's insiders in the commodities market, down in the trading pits, they call it. And those people see the buying and the selling and the trading going on day in and day out, and they see where the trends are moving. Now, back in 1920, we Americans embarked upon a new adventure, and it was the industrial agriculture model. Now, up until 1920, the United States of America had been practicing the Ten Commandment model in our agriculture. So I need to give you a little historical background as to why the Ten Commandment model didn't work. It was a failure. And because it failed, somebody came along and said, well, we got to have a solution to this. Now, the Ten Commandment model is predicated upon 15 agricultural laws that God gave to Moses out at Mount Sinai. He said, now, if you'll practice this model over here, you'll get rain in due season, you'll get abundant crops, you'll have plenty, there'll be no shortages, you won't be faced with rationing. He says, I guarantee it. It's a part and parcel of our contract, our covenant that we're making here today. And he said, I'll make it rain. I'll give you the former rains and the latter rains, and I'll make your ground produce, and everything's going to be wonderful. It'll be just like Barney and Mr. Rogers and Sesame Street all rolled up into one. Now, if you do what you're told. Now, if you don't do what I tell you over here, then you're going to have famines and shortages, and you're going to have all kinds of problems over here that are going to work out to be a curse to you. And this information that I'm just paraphrasing here is located in the Bible, and it's in Leviticus chapter 26. And Deuteronomy chapter 28, first 15 verses of those two chapters will tell you all the Mr. Rogers, Sesame Street, Barney, glorified utopia that you all want and are just really desirous of having. All right, now that was the model. Now, we never did practice those 15 agricultural laws. We practiced some of them. And of course, we got a predictable result. When you practice some of the traffic laws, you get a predictable result. You get tickets, you have accidents, you know, things happen. When you practice all of the traffic laws, you don't get any tickets, and you probably won't have any accidents. So most people practice most of the traffic laws most of the time, and they just have some tickets and some accidents once in a while. It isn't perfect, but you know, it's not too shabby. If you use that as an example or as a model to go by, I think you can follow this through. So for about 3,000 years, we practiced the Ten Commandments model. Now, here in the United States, we had such an abundance of food that during World War I, we were feeding the world. After World War I, we prevented famine. We Americans were just over here producing so much. And we used the Ten Commandments model. And we used the Ten Commandments economic model. And it had an abundance over here, never had any shortages. Then, about 1920, right after World War I, somebody came along and said, hey, listen, this agricultural model isn't working very good. Let's replace it with an industrial model. Let's replace it. Instead of having a biological agriculture, which is, you know, the way agriculture works, it's a biologic process, let's have an industrial process like making steel and automobiles. So from 1920 to 1940, we got after it, and then we were interrupted during World War II. And right after the end of World War II, we got back on the track again, and we went to work on industrial agriculture, that is, industrialization of our agricultural processes. And by 1970, we had accomplished that, about 25 years. And so from 1970, with the miracle, you know, the Green Revolution and industrialization of agriculture, that's a top-down central planning model. And it has had problems right from the get-go, but we're at a crisis mode right now. The amount of food being produced around the world and the number of people that are eating the food has now gotten out of balance to such a degree that there are now shortages showing up. And there's a complicating factor here that has never been extant in the world before, and that is all famines in the past have been regional. They've been local to regional. And that's because everybody produced their own food in their own countries. In fact, the basic survival mode, the basic survival strategy is that everybody has to be a farmer, everybody has to feed himself. And in 1920, 44% of the American people were living on the land, 56% were living in cities. So you had 44 people out of 100 producing food and fiber for themselves, and food and fiber for the 56 that were living in the cities. And as time progressed along through, you know, the Depression years, and then World War II, and then after World War II, there's been a steady progression. We went from 44% in 1920 to 15% in 1950, to 6% in 1969, And today we have less than 2 million farmers in the United States. We have more people locked up in our jails now than we have farmers. At the very same time, the population has been growing. See, in 1920, we had 100 million people. 44% were farmers, were living on the land. Then by 2000, we were down to 2 million farmers and 300 million people. So our population doubled, and the number of people feeding us moved from about 50% down to, what's 2 million out of 300 million? It's less than 1%. 3 million farmers would be 1%, so we're down to around, 0.75. Now, conversely, America has now become a net food importing country. 2008 was the big year. 2008, we've arrived. We are now importing. 2006, we imported more food than we produced. 2007 was a surplus year. 2008 is a net loss year. It's going to be a net loser. And it's expected that from now on, America will be a net importer of foods. Now, it's no problem for us because we've got the money. We can go out into the world marketplace, and this is the complicating factor. You see, a famine used to occur in China. It didn't affect the people in Vietnam. It didn't affect the people in Japan. But now, a famine in China is going to affect the people in Japan. It's going to affect the people in California, Washington, and Oregon. And here's why. Because of the industrialization of agriculture, we've created a one-world market for rice, as an illustration. Now, the price of rice here just 2 or 3 years ago was 32 cents a pound. The last time I heard it was $1.32 a pound. Now, for Americans, that's a fourfold increase. In other words, from 30 cents to $1.30, it's gone up by four times. And to us, it takes a bite out of our paycheck. But for a guy in the Philippines, it makes the difference between life and death. And that's because that poor guy, he only makes $4 a day to start with, and one half of the people in the world, that's about 3.25 billion people, only make $2 a day. The average guy in the world makes $2 a day. And he's out in the marketplace, and he's not competing in the local marketplace like he used to. Today, he's competing in the world marketplace, and the world market for rice is $1.30 a pound. So what that means is that here in America, we're going to bid the price of rice up to $1.30, and we're going to buy the rice because the guys that have the rice to sell, over in Burma or Pakistan or someplace, they're going to sell it where they're going to get the most money. See, before we had this world economy, before we had this world industrialization of agriculture, we had a biological process whereby millions of people were out there working, producing food. Today, you don't have millions of people producing food. And you miss something here, boys and girls. Listen to this. Not only did you have millions of people producing food for you and me and everybody else, those millions of people were producing food for themselves. That's very important. Not only were they feeding you and me, they were feeding themselves. Now, when you industrialize agriculture, you displace millions of people that were formerly making their living as subsistence farmers. Now they're industrial workers living in China, and they want the better life. I mean, after all, they're making money, and they can go out into the world marketplace and buy it. And they are, and they have, and that's why that's part of the problem that you have $4 gasoline. And it's part of the problem that you have $1.32 a pound of rice. And that's because they've also got the money to bid the price up. Now, the people that are going to take it in the shorts first are the people that are making $2 a day. Because at $2 a day, now it takes a pound of rice a day per person. So you take a guy and his wife and a couple of kids, that's four of them, and they got to have a pound of rice a day. That's 4 pounds of rice. At 30 cents, it's $1.20. So he spends around 50, 60, 70, 80%, somewhere between 50 and 80% of what he earns goes to food. Now, take the same guy making $2 a day and raise the price of rice now to $1.30, and all of a sudden his whole $2 won't even buy 2 pounds. Now, before he was getting by on 4 pounds of rice for four people per day, now all of a sudden there's less than 2 pounds for the same four people. See where your problem is? And that's why you've got this thing of rioting going on in Indonesia, in Haiti, Dominican Republic. And that's why you're talking here in terms of the World Bank says 48 out of 58 countries tracked have imposed price controls. Well, price controls or consumer subsidies or export restrictions or lower tariffs. You got a problem here has to be solved. Now, you're going to have that same problem here in the United States. And that's because the United States is broke. I mean, we are bankrupt. And because we're broke and bankrupt, it means our checks aren't going to clear much longer. And when our checks don't clear, those people that are shipping that food, remember, now we're a net importer of food. We're a net importer of shoes, a net importer of steel, a net importer of automobiles. I mean, when we get down to bottom line, we export $200 billion a year and import $1 trillion. This year's projected trade deficit's going to hit $987 billion. That's just a tad shy of $1 trillion. Which means that we're importing now about five times more than we're exporting. Put another way, we're spending five times more than we're making. So, if you're making $50,000 a year and you're spending $250,000, you're consuming your equity at a pretty rapid rate. It depends on how much you got. But you know, if you're making $50,000 a year, a guy making $50,000 who has a net estate of $250,000, about 5 to 1 would be about right. And we Americans over here, we've been consuming our assets, you know, at a prodigious rate now for a number of years. And it's about to come to an end because, you know, just your common sense tells you that at some point in time, the people that are selling to you and want to get paid, and we've been paying them with that Mr. Rogers money, with that Barney and Sesame Street money. It's called a fiat currency. And it's about the equivalent of me writing you a 3x5 card that says, I owe you. And, you know, it's fine as long as you got confidence in me. But then one of these days you come along and you say, hey, pay me. Redeem these 3x5 cards. And I want cows and tractors and gasoline and gold and silver and wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. And I say, well, I've got a lot of paper, but I don't have any of those goods. Now, here's the bottom line on the goods. If here in America, all of us people here in America took all of our money and we went into the store and converted it to goods, we'd all get 2 cents on the dollar. That's how much you have in the way of goods, and that's how much you have in the way of paper money out there chasing those goods. Now, so far, you people believe that your just-in-time delivery and the goods on the shelf at Walmart are more than adequate. Well, I got news for you. You've only got 2% out there, 2% in goods for every 100 cents worth of paper money you got out there chasing it. Now, if too many of you people go to the store and buy too much too fast, that shortage is going to show up in short order, and when it does, that shortage sends people shopping in a hurry. And then the more people shop, the less goods there are. And then the goods that are coming in from overseas, you know, and that's everything. I mean, there isn't anything we use in America we're not shipping in. You're going to take about an 80% cut in your standard of living, and that's going to happen suddenly. Now, that's going to be very traumatic for most of you people who've been watching Barney all your life. Hey, hang on here for a second. I've got to give you a reminder that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 112 countries. Daily over the internet and radio. For more information about the law school and Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, nonprofit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed to the website as well. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. And the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct, at least to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program, though, are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, the beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or this local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The International Forecaster, you can get a copy of it, probably a complimentary copy, by writing to the email address, internationalforecaster@yahoo.com. Again, that's the International Forecast at yahoo.com. It's $160 a year, and then it comes out twice a week, and it's about 20 pages twice a week, or about 40 pages a week. It's probably the single most comprehensive newsletter in the business. I recommend it at the top of the heap, then I recommend the Privateer number 2, and then the Money Changer number 3 in that order. If you can't afford all three, which I recommend, then take the Forecaster first, and then the Privateer second. And then the Money Changer third. Money Changer comes out once a month. The Privateer comes out twice a month. And the International Forecaster comes out twice a week. And it covers such things that I just told you about, just reported on here. The World Bank says 48 out of 58 countries tracked have imposed price controls. Now, these price controls, consumer subsidies, export restrictions, and lower tariffs are the precursor now to rationing. And rationing is coming worldwide. Some countries will have it worse than others, and the United States is going to have it really bad. Really bad. And that's because of this humongous debt, bankruptcy, and balance of payments deficit. And then our politicians like Joe Lieberman and, now not Lamar Alexander, he was opposed to the 53-cent carbon tax. But it passed in the Senate, I think it was 79 to 13. I don't think that's what I heard last night. It was a lopsided margin. So you can rest assured you're going to get it, whether you like it or not. This 53-cent gas tax is going to come on top of all the taxes that you've now got. And this tax isn't going to be posted on the pump. It isn't going to say on your gas pump, carbon tax, 53 cents. That's not how that game's played. Your politicians are very intelligent people. They've been to college. They're paid professionals. They're liars. They're wicked and evil. But they're not dumb. You don't get to be a senator or representative or president or a cabinet member by being dumb, though. So what they're going to do is they're going to pass this legislation. They're going to impose it upon your public utility. Now, remember that corporations do not pay taxes. You remember that story, boys and girls? Corporations do not pay taxes. They never have in the past. They do not now as I speak, and they will not in the future tense, pay any tax in the United States. What corporations do is collect that tax from you and me and then pass it on to the government. They're the middlemen in between in this fascist government partnership between government and big business. That's the way that game is played. So what they'll do is they'll put this 53-cent tax on your public utility. The public utility will raise your electric bill. That's all. No fuss, no muss. You can put this tax on Exxon. There's no problem. If they can raise gasoline prices from $3 to $4, they can raise gasoline prices from $4 to $5. Or from $4 to $4.53. Just mark your calendar. That's the way that'll work. Now, you'll never see this 53-cent tax, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. My guess would be that by the time this tax is fully implemented, it's going to be around $3 or $4 a gallon. You know, it isn't coming in the next week or 10 days, but it's coming over the next 2 or 3 years. Now, in Zimbabwe, they've got a rationing program over there right now. I don't know if you knew this or not, but over in Zimbabwe, the rationing story goes like this. Zimbabwe's retail outlets continue to grapple with shortages as the economy remains on a recession path, with the manufacturing sector still battling against power outages and foreign currency shortages. There was little sign of an immediate relief to the manufacturing sector as a result of a monetary policy statement by Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe Governor Gideon Gono last week, although commentators said measures to do with the liberalization of the exchange rate could bring industrial operations, particularly exports, back to life. The Zimbabwe dollar, which had been fixed at 30,000 to the U.S. dollar, slumped to a historic low against the U.S. dollar, trading at 160 million to the U.S. dollar after new measures became effective on Friday of last week. Now, let's pause here for a moment. Now, when you get down to where your money is trading at 30,000 to the dollar, I mean, look at the Japanese yen. It trades at about 100 to the U.S. dollar. So a Japanese yen is about worth one penny. So you go to the grocery store, it takes a 100 yen bill to buy what a $1 bill buys here in the United States. And American money is only worth 2 cents compared to what it was worth in 1930. You've already lost 98% of the value of your money so far. So I've said you're only arguing over the last 2 cents. Now, that's the official trading rate at 30,000. The trading rate out on the street where reality is, I mean, aside from Barney and Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers, out in the real world on the street, it's 160 million to one. In fact, I just had a $10 million Zimbabwe note in my hands a couple of weeks ago. Guy came into class and he said, here, you want to hold $10 million in your hand? Here's one right here. Now, there's nothing on the shelves in Zimbabwe. There isn't anything on the shelves. Things like eggs, butter, gasoline, matches, cooking oil, spices, sugar, meat, milk, it's just not available, period. You can get it on the black market. You've got rationing. Well, you got to have a ration card and a national ID card, social security number, in order to get your ration card, and then you go into the store, and even if you've got the money, you can't buy the goods because they're not there. And that's because Zimbabwe, like the United States, relies upon just foreign exchange to do its buying. Now, the United States, that's where we're headed. We're headed the way of Zimbabwe. Now, it's not a very, very pleasant thought. I'm not looking forward to it, but you can bet that if there's four choices to make, first best choice, second best choice, third best choice, and fourth best choice, left to a politician, he's always going to choose the fourth best choice. Fourth best. He's going to make the first best choice for Wall Street and then the banks, big business and corporations, and the worst possible choice for Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife driving truck and trying to buy groceries. Now, that being the case, for those of us that are bottom feeders, my suggestion is prepare for it, get ready for it, so that it doesn't take you by surprise. Let me show you something here about surprise. There's a story in here about food preparations here in the United States. I gotta tell you this. How many people in the United States of America are prepared for shortages, prepared for disaster? The answer is 7%. 7%. The American Red Cross estimate only refers to those who have emergency kits with a 72-hour food supply. If there was an epidemic or event caused or causing a temporary food shortage of 6 weeks to 6 months, then no one is prepared. Do you know who the 7% are? It's the 7% who have a 72-hour emergency FEMA kit. Got that. Boys and girls, let me tell you something here. Do you know that you can live for 72 hours without food or water? Let me repeat that for all of you Barney Sesame Street generation out there. You don't need a FEMA pack for 72 hours. Hell, you could do without anything at all. You are not going to die in 72 hours because you don't have food or water. It ain't going to happen. So all you're talking about here with a 72-hour FEMA pack, in reality, you're just talking about an inconvenience. I'm being inconvenienced, and I want to avoid that. So the American Red Cross says that if you've got a problem that lasts for 6 weeks, you know, virtually no one in America has a 6-week supply of food. Now, I want to go on record and tell you right now that if you have a 6-week supply of food, that's good. That means that you're going to die 6 weeks after everybody else does. Boys and girls, famines and food supplies at the very minimum work from year to year. You have to have a 1-year supply of food on hand to carry you through from one harvest to the next. I know that most of you people didn't know that because you are totally divorced from reality. So let me point this out again. I'm a farmer. Let me tell you that the tomatoes you have during the course of the year, and at a point in time, the frost comes, kills the tomato plants, and from about October on, there won't be any more tomatoes. Not until about next June. See, our tomatoes just went in the ground. We got them in the ground now, been in there for about 2 weeks maybe. And in about another 30 to 45 days, we're going to have tomatoes coming off those plants, and then we'll have tomatoes in July, August, and September, and then the frost is going to come and kill the plants. So that means that when the tomatoes are on the plants, we have to eat them during those 3 months fresh. That's good. What are we going to do for the next 9 months for tomatoes? Well, boys and girls, they have to be dried or canned. Dried or canned. They have to be preserved so that you can have tomatoes in December, January, February, and March. Now, up until now, you've been relying upon Walmart, and Walmart's been doing a good job. And Walmart buys your tomatoes in Hermosillo, Mexico, and ships them into the United States. And other big companies take those tomatoes from Mexico here in the United States and put them in cans so that you got cans that you can go into the Walmart store in January, February, and March and buy canned tomatoes. You don't have a problem. As long as the system is in operation, you don't have a problem. Now, here's where the problem develops. The Mexicans need to get paid at some point in time. And when the United States defaults on its international balance of payments, the Mexicans are going to shut off your tomatoes. And then you do not have a domestic tomato-producing operation in the United States. We used to have a tomato industry in this country. We used to produce all of our own tomatoes right here in America. Never had to import a tomato from anybody, anywhere. But we don't have that anymore. And it's not just tomatoes. I mean, it amounts to, you know, all kinds of things that we buy here in the United States and take for granted, you know, are now being shipped in because there's a deficit that our production here in the United States doesn't cover. And that's because we went into this industrialization. And this is why I'm telling you that when this shortage develops, you're going to have rationing. Now, last night I was watching the news, and there was the same Lair News there. And they had this food bank, and this food bank was distributing food to people that didn't have food. Some town, I forgot where it was now. And these food banks are operating all over the country, and the motive behind the story was that here in America, there are growing numbers of people that are running short of money. They're unable to buy gasoline at $4 a gallon, pay their taxes, and earn enough money to buy food. And so they're relying now more and more on these food handouts. All right, now, let me tell you, that's a mistake. That's a mistake. The primary duty of every human being drawing breath is to feed himself. The industrial model says we don't have to feed ourselves because we're going to buy it down at Walmart. The industrialist is going to produce it. The marketplace is going to put it on the shelf, and I'm going to go out and work doing what I do, earn the money to go in and buy it. That's the industrial model. And as long as the industrial model is up and running, it's a fine system. I'm not knocking it at all. Hell, it's a hell of a neat system. But it's unsustainable. It's unsustainable because you can't predict a 10-year drought out in the western United States or a 6-year drought in Australia because you can't predict the whims of God, the Creator. Remember that guy that our nemesis, the guy that's always behind all of our troubles and problems. It's our Creator. Remember, He gave us some instructions and marching orders. We gave Him the finger and said we're going off to Pittsburgh to work in the steel mill. Now, what our Creator told us was to get out there and sweat by the sweat of your brow and produce your food, your clothing, and your shelter. And you said, not by the hair on my chinny chin chin, I'm going to Pittsburgh and work in the steel mills. Well, okay, now as a result of that, and I'm not talking about something that might happen in the future, I'm talking about something that's already happened past tense. We already did that. We've already been there and done that. So now we're all living in Pittsburgh. And then we don't know how to grow a tomato. We don't know how to provide our own food. And I know somebody's going to write me a letter and say, well, I grow tomatoes every year. Well, big deal. But you eat more than just tomatoes, Mary. And while you may have 3 or 4 tomato plants, and for 4 months a year you've got all the fresh tomatoes that you can eat, in December, January, and February, how many of those tomatoes did you can, Mary? Do you even have any canning jars left? Because over the past 10 years, I've been out here buying canning jars for a nickel apiece. I mean, all the old-timers used to can here. They quit. Hell, there's nobody that cans anything. I'm not even sure that there's very many people that would even know how to can. Do you people know how to can beef? Do you know how to can in a water pack or in a pressure cooker? I mean, I don't know. You people know how to dry food? I mean, how many of you people out there can kill a cow, butcher it, cut it up, and then either dry it or can it? Because, boys and girls, I'm not sure that you're going to have electricity to run your freezer. Are you? So I'm prepared here to do without power. Now, I don't know whether the power grid's going to go down. I don't know whether we're going to be able to keep the power grid running. I don't know whether I'm going to be able to afford to pay electricity. I mean, if our Congress says that they're going to put a 53-cent tax on the power companies, and that's the opening round, I expect they're going to put a $2, $3, or $4 tax on those companies. And electric power, which today, you know, I just paid the power bill yesterday. It was $1,000. My power bill was $1,000. I can assure you that by the time my power bill goes up to $4,000, we're going to be turning off more lights. And I just guarantee it. See, when the price of gasoline was $1 a gallon, I burned lots of it. Now that it's $4 a gallon, I burn a lot less. When gasoline is $6 a gallon, I'll guarantee you I'm going to be burning less. I don't know about you, but, you know, it's the way life is. Now, price is the normal marketplace rationing mechanism from the Ten Commandment model. It's called the free market economy. And that free market economy has worked very well for us. It's worked well for mankind. We got it from the Ten Commandments. It comes from thou shalt not steal. Now, of course, there's other people out there that they think stealing's a good program, like the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. The first plank is the opposite to thou shalt not steal. It calls for the abolition of all right to property and land. Well, boys and girls, when you abolish the right to property and land, you abolish the right to property, period, because all property comes out of the ground. All wealth comes out of the ground. So the state comes along and says, well, we're going to own all the ground. Well, you don't need to worry about the state taking your ground. They already took it, past tense. That's why you're paying a property tax. And if you say, well, I don't own any ground, I just rent. Well, okay. Did you think your landlord was paying the property tax for you? Wake up, Martha. When you pay your rent every month, you're paying the property tax. So let's wake up to reality over here. No matter whether you're buying the land and paying or you're paying payments on the land, or you own it free and clear, or you rent, you're paying the property tax. Now, property tax is set by the government. The government doesn't have any restrictions placed upon it whatsoever. They'll just charge you whatever the hell they want to charge. See how simple that is? And then you guys in California are going to write me a letter now, and you're going to say, well, we got Proposition 13. Okay, you just stick with your Proposition 13 out there, and watch your legislature as they make an end run around that. I don't know exactly how they'll do that, but when they need money, they'll just make an end run around it. Since when did your government bureaucracy over here ever listen to your Constitution or the will of the people? Huh? Now somebody's going to say, well, voting, you know, we got to get out and vote. Get out and vote for what? What did you intend to change here with your vote? Well, I'm going to vote for Barack Obama. We're going to put an end to this war in Iraq. And I'll just bet you that if you elect Barack Obama, you'll have troops in Iraq for the next... Well, until they're finally thrown out or defeated. And I don't think they'll be there for 4 or 5 years, but if time goes on, they'll be there for 4 or 5 years, and that's because Mr. Obama takes his orders from the Committee of 300. And I don't know what the Committee of 300 has in mind. They're not writing me letters and telling me, but whatever those boys decide is what Mr. Obama's going to do. And the same thing with Mr. McCain and Hillary. I mean, that's just where reality's at, so let's wake up and smell the coffee here. Now, rationing is got to be the worst-case solution. It's the top-down imposition of share of the shortage is what it boils down to. It's what they've got in Zimbabwe. It's 3 million Zimbabweans have now fled Zimbabwe and are now living in South Africa. Americans will be fleeing across the border to Mexico. I mean, that's where that'll be coming as this thing unwinds and as it progresses. Now, not everybody in Zimbabwe is unemployed. 20% are employed, 80% are unemployed. There's still trade, commerce, business, and industry going on in Zimbabwe. Life goes on. Most of the people still live there. Most of the people here in the United States will stay right here and we'll tough it out just like we did back in the Great Depression. But there's going to be a change in your standard of living, so I'm just suggesting that you get prepared for it and get ready for it. And the better prepared you are, well, then the better your standard of living is going to be. That's how that's going to run out or work out. Keeping in mind now that only 7% of Americans are prepared, and it used to be to eating what you cook. Now, the grain and flour as your new full-time diet. It is very stressful to dramatically change your diet, especially in a crisis. Severe diet changes can make people sick. The end result is adding complication to an already stressful situation. So there's an easier, cheaper, safer way to be prepared. No cooking required, no preparation other than adding water required. You can eat food you normally eat without the canned food taste. It can last up to 30 years. So if you don't need it this year or next year, you don't have to throw it out. Freeze-dried food can be ordered bulk. Packages for a family supply of food for a month or a year or more are available and can be shipped to your door in a few weeks. And if you're concerned about preparedness, food rationing, or shortages, then you can get insurance against this risk. It's called freeze-dried food in bulk. Now, I wanted to point out here that freeze-dried food is probably the most expensive way to stockpile. If there's a more expensive way to do it, I don't know. I don't know how to do that. So we'll talk a little more about that as we progress along, but I wanted to point out to you that here in America, only 7% of the people are prepared for a disaster, and that's the FEMA preparation of 72 hours. I mean, that's a joke. I mean, that puts you back with Barney and Sesame Street, kids. And I'm suggesting that you wake up and smell the coffee here because you're going to have some serious lifestyle changes. And if you have to change your food in the middle of this lifestyle change, and you got to live on a diet of hominy or okra or grits, you know, week after week after week. I mean, you know, some of you people over there are going to think manna was really pretty good stuff. So I just thought I'd throw that one out there for the openers and tell you that you got some big taxes coming your way. You got some big gas prices coming up. $6 a gallon is where it's headed. And then it's going to go up from there. All right, now let's give you a final reminder here that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. And we're heard in more than 112 countries daily over the internet and radio. For more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, nonprofit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives. And that can be accessed through our website as well at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.